Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to break down big ideas into something you can really use, making sure you leave feeling, well, properly informed.
That's the goal.
Today, we're doing something pretty fundamental. We're decoding language itself, really, how sentences work. We're diving into Chapter 2, Sentence Blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
We want to figure out how sentences are built, how they carry meaning, and, maybe most importantly, how you can get a handle on their structure without feeling overwhelmed. Think of it as a kind of shortcut.
And it's a really valuable shortcut, actually. It goes way beyond just, you know, grammar rules for a test. Understanding these basic parts of a sentence, that's core to communicating clearly.
How so?
Well, it helps you slice through all the information noise out there. You can spot the main message faster when you read, and when you write or speak, your ideas come across much more effectively. It's like having a solid mental map for language.
A mental map. I like that. So it's less about rote memorization, more about grasping the logic underneath.
Makes sense.
Okay, so our mission for this deep dive is pretty clear. What are the absolutely essential bits of any sentence, and how do all these pieces, the main players, the supporting cast, how do they actually work together to give us a complete thought?
Yeah.
Let's get into this blueprint.
Let's do it.
So the chapter, Sentence Blueprint, kicks off with this idea. Every sentence has essential parts that work together to express a complete idea. Simple enough, but powerful.
It is. Like a machine, you said. Each part has its job.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And the chapter gives us this great overview table. We'll use that as our guide, sort of our map for today. Good?
Okay.
So, first things first, where do we even start? Well, every sentence needs a main focus, right? A central character. And that's the subject.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think of it as the star of the sentence. It's simply who or what the sentence is about, the one doing the action or the one being described.
Yeah, star works well, and it's absolutely central. But sometimes it's not just the first word which can trip people up. The blueprint has a neat little tip, a grammar bite.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
It just says, ask yourself, who or what is this sentence about? That simple question usually cuts right through. Try it mentally. It really helps.
Okay, let's try. The baby is crying.
Mm-hmm.
Ask the question, who is crying?
The baby.
The baby. Simple. That's our subject.
Yeah.
Okay, another one. My cousins are visiting us. Who is visiting?
My cousins.
My cousins. Got it. They're the ones doing the visiting. But you mentioned it's not always first. What about, say, under the old oak tree sat a forgotten treasure? That sounds more complex.
Ah, good one. That's where the question really shines. So, under the old oak tree sat a forgotten treasure. If you ask who or what sat under the tree.
It's a forgotten treasure.
Exactly. Not the tree, not underneath. The treasure is the subject. It's just moved later in the sentence, maybe for a bit of dramatic effect.
Okay. So the question helps you find the real subject no matter where it is.
Yeah.
That's actually really useful for reading carefully.
Definitely. It helps you spot the true agent or focus.
All right. So we've found our star, the subject. What's next?
Right.
Logically, it's what the star does or what's being said about them, right?
Right.
And that brings us to the predicate. You could call this the engine of the sentence, maybe?
The engine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. It provides the power, the movement.
That tells us what the subject does or has or is or feels. And importantly, it always has the verb in it, plus everything connected to that verb or state of being.
That's the key. If the subject is just, you know, sitting there, the predicate is what gives it life. It explains what's actually happening. It's the action, the description, the dynamic part.
Okay, let's connect that back. The baby is crying.
Great.
Is crying. That's the predicate. Describes the baby's action.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousins are visiting us. The predicate is are visiting us. It explains what our cousins are doing.
See, subject sets the stage. Predicate drives the story forward. Makes it a complete thought.
Makes sense. Okay, so subject does something. Predicate.
Yeah.
But sometimes that something affects another thing or person, right? Mm-hmm. The action moves on to something else.
Exactly. And that's where objects come in.
Objects. The action receivers.
Yeah.
As our blueprint calls them. And it says there are two main kinds.
Yep, direct and indirect.
Let's start with the direct object. The blueprint says this is the thing or person directly receiving the action, what the verb is done to.
That's it. Simplest way to think about it. Imagine he kicked. Kicked what?
The ball.
Right. He kicked the ball. The ball directly receives the kicking. It's the immediate target of the verb's action. Straightforward.
Okay.
Although, quick side note, some verbs don't need an object, remember? Like sleep or arrive. They're called intransitive. The action doesn't pass on to anything.
Right, like he sleeps.
Yeah.
Full stop. No object needed.
Exactly. But for verbs that do transfer action, finding that direct object shows you exactly where the action lands.
Got it. That completes the picture of the action.
Yeah.
But then there's the indirect object. This one's a bit different. The blueprint says it's the person thing benefiting from the action, or who it's done for or to.
Yeah, this one sometimes causes a bit of confusion. How do you tell it apart from the direct object, especially if both are there?
Good question.
Let's use the example. She gave me a gift. Ask yourself, what was given?
A gift.
Right? A gift is the direct object. It's the thing directly acted upon by gave. But who received the benefit of the giving?
Me.
Exactly. Me is the indirect object. I didn't get gaved. I received the benefit of the gift being given. It's like the action flows through the direct object to the indirect object. Direct object, indirect me.
That's a really clear way to put it. Like a delivery chain, subject acts, direct object gets delivered, indirect object is the recipient.
Precisely.
The blueprint gives a couple more examples too. She told her friend a secret.
Mm-hmm.
So a secret is what was told direct object.
Mm-hmm.
And her friend is the one who benefits from being told indirect object.
Perfect.
And I sent my brother a postcard. A postcard is the direct object, what was sent, and my brother is the indirect object, the beneficiary. Okay, that distinction is much clearer now.
Good. It really helps track the flow of information in the sentence.
All right, moving on. Sometimes verbs, especially those being verbs like is or seems, they need a bit more help to make sense, don't they? The idea feels incomplete otherwise.
Yeah, they don't always express a full action that takes an object. They link things.
And that's where complements come in. The blueprint calls them sentence finishers. They basically complete the meaning started by the subject and verb. And there are two types here as well.
Right. And what's really interesting about complements is how they provide that absolutely necessary piece of information. It's not just extra detail. The sentence wouldn't fully make sense without them. They really tie the core idea together, whether it's about the subject or the object.
Okay, first type, subject complement. This one, it says, follows a linking verb. You mentioned verbs like is, are, was, becomes, seems, feels, those kinds of verbs.
Exactly. Linking verbs.
And the subject complement tells us more about the subject itself, its identity or its state.
Yeah, let's take an example. Ravi is a doctor. Is our linking verb. A doctor isn't something Ravi did, it's something Ravi is. It completes the meaning about Ravi, our subject.
So doctor complements Ravi.
Precisely. And it's not always a noun, it could be an adjective too, describing the subject, like she is happy. Happy describes she. It completes the idea about her state after the linking verb is.
Got it. Completes the idea about the subject. Now, the other type is the object complement. This one, the blueprint says, describes or renames the object.
Right. So this one tells us more about the direct object, not the subject. Often, it explains what the object became or how it's viewed because of the verb's action.
Example.
How about, they elected him captain. Okay, him is the direct object, the one who was elected. But what about captain? It's not a separate object receiving the action. Instead, it describes or renames him. It tells us what he became because they elected him.
Ah, so it completes the idea about the object him. Without captain, we just know they elected him, but not as what.
Exactly. Adds that essential descriptive layer to the object.
Okay, subject, predicate, objects, complements. Feels like we're building the core structure, what's left, the decoration.
You could say that. That brings us to modifiers, the decorators of the sentence, as you put it. I like that analogy.
Yeah, the color, the detail.
Yeah.
Right. The blueprint defines them as words, phrases, or clauses that describe or add detail to other parts of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And they answer those questions like how, when, where, why, or which one. They really flesh things out.
They absolutely do. Modifiers are what give sentences richness and precision. They turn a basic statement into something vivid, specific. Without them, language would be pretty bare, wouldn't it?
Very functional, but maybe a bit boring.
Exactly. And understanding them is also key for, you know, critical reading. Are the modifiers genuinely adding useful detail, or are they maybe subtly trying to sway your opinion?
That's a really interesting point. Okay, so types of modifiers. The blueprint breaks it down simply. We have adjectives.
Describing nouns.
Right. Like, the red ball bounced. Red tells us about the ball. Then adverbs.
Describing verbs, usually, or adjectives or other adverbs.
Like, she runs quickly. Quickly tells us how she runs. And then it mentions phrases acting as modifiers.
Yeah, groups of words working together to add detail.
Like, the man with a cane walks slowly. The phrase, with a cane, modifies man. Tells us which one.
Perfect examples. And this is where you can really start to feel the rhythm and detail in language. The blueprint actually suggests a fun activity here, a listening activity, modifier clap.
A clap? How does that work?
Well, the idea is to train your ear. You listen to a sentence and mentally clap whenever you hear a word or phrase that's adding description, a modifier. We can try it now.
Okay, let's try. Give me one. All right.
The girl with a red umbrella walked quietly. Where would you clap?
Red describes the umbrella, so clap for red. And quietly describes how she walked, so clap for quietly. What about with a red umbrella? Is that whole phrase a modifier?
Yes, with a red umbrella modifies girl. So you could clap for red modifying umbrella within the phrase and for quietly modifying walked. See how it highlights the descriptive bits?
Yeah, I do. Okay, give me another one.
How about he ate a spicy samosa in the park?
Okay. Spicy describes the samosa. Clap. And in the park tells us where he ate. Clap again.
You got it. Spicy is an adjective modifier. In the park is a prepositional phrase acting as an adverbial modifier, telling where. It's just a way to actively notice those words and phrases that add all that extra flavor and information.
That's actually a pretty cool way to practice. Makes it more active. Okay, wow, we've covered a lot of ground here. Subject, predicate, objects, complements, modifiers, all the parts from the blueprint.
Yeah.
So let's pull it all together. What does this actually mean in practice? Let's maybe loop back to that assessment and review table in the chapter. Can we do a quick recap to really solidify these roles?
Sure. Sounds good. Let's run through them concisely using the table's examples.
Remember, it's the who or what. The example is the cat. That's our focus.
Okay. The cat.
Then predicate. What is said about the subject in the example is sleeping on the mat. Tells us what the cat is doing. The whole phrase.
Got it. Sleeping cat.
Direct object. Receives the action. Example, she bought a dress. A dress is what she bought. Direct recipient.
Makes sense.
Indirect object. For whom what the action happens. Example, I gave him a gift. Him is the beneficiary.
Right. The to whom.
Complement. Completes meaning, especially after linking verbs or relating to the object. Example, she is happy. Happy completes the idea about she. It's a subject complement here.
Completes the thought.
Or if it was they elected him captain, captain would be an object complement, completing the idea about him.
Right.
And finally, modifier. Adds details. Example, the girl in blue danced gracefully. In blue describes the girl, gracefully describes how she danced. Adds the specifics.
Okay, seeing them laid out like that, side by side with examples, it really does make it clear how each part has its own job, but they all connect. It's like you said earlier, understanding this blueprint, breaking sentences down this way, it just makes understanding how language works feel much less mysterious, much clearer.
It really does demystify it.
So that wraps up our deep dives into Chapter 2, Sentence Blueprint. We've walked through all those essential parts, the stars, the engines, the receivers, the finishers, the decorators, everything that builds a sentence and brings language alive. You should now have a pretty solid toolkit.
Absolutely. And hopefully everyone listening sees that this isn't just about, you know, abstract grammar. Understanding these roles, it genuinely helps in the real world.
How so?
Well, it makes you a sharper reader, definitely. Yeah. You can cut through fluff and see the core message more easily. Your own writing becomes clearer, more forceful, because you're consciously building sentences with these parts in mind.
Right. You know how to put the ideas together effectively.
Exactly. And honestly, it can even give you a deeper appreciation for language itself, how these structures subtly shape how we think and understand the world. So we really encourage you, try applying this. Notice these parts in sentences you read, hear, or even write yourself.
Yeah, once you start looking for them, you really do see language differently. So here's a final thought to take away with you. The next time you encounter a sentence reading a book, an article, an email, whatever, pause for just a second. Try to spot its star, subject, its engine, predicate, its action receivers, objects, its finishers, complements, and its decorators, modifiers. You might actually be surprised how much more you notice, how much clearer the meaning becomes, and maybe most importantly, how much more precise and effective your own communication can be when you start thinking this way. It really is like unlocking a whole new level to the power of words.